When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Today's episode is sponsored by ByHeart, which is an infant nutrition company built from the ground up to deliver real innovation on behalf of babies and parents. Their mission is simple: make the best formula in the world. In our house, we never skim on family time together on the weekends. Instead of racing around crazy, we prioritize time at home, time to relax, time to do fun, crazy things that we wouldn't have ordinarily. And you know who else doesn't skim? ByHeart. ByHeart is the only American-made infant formula with globally sourced ingredients to use organic, grass-fed whole milk without a drop of skim. Whole milk is full of healthy fats like naturally occurring MFGM, which play an important role in babies' brain development and growth. Are you curious about ByHeart? Redeem your welcome offer at byheart.com/podcast with codename Zibby20 for a limited time.
Hi, I'm Zibby Owens, and you're listening to Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. This 30-minute podcast features a new author interviewed by me every single day, 365 days a year, for about 30 minutes. I am also the publisher for Zibby Books, which publishes 12 books a year in fiction and memoir. Our books are already out now, and you can check it out on zibbybooks.com. And we have a magazine called Zibby Mag, where we have lots of wonderful essays and lifestyle features. That's at zibbymag.com. We have classes at zibbyclasses.com. And I recently opened a bookstore in LA called Zibby's Bookshop at 1113 Montana Avenue at 11th Street in San Monica. I hope that you are able to enjoy some of our other offerings. But this here podcast is the basis of all of it and started in 2018. And no matter what I do, this is basically my favorite thing. Enjoy. This weekend, I'm re-releasing my episode with Lori Gottlieb, who I've gotten to know since this episode in LA and gotten to know the amazing work her son is doing to help other kids with their own mental health issues. Lori's book was a massive success, as you all know. Maybe you should talk to someone. But she's such a nice person. She came to the opening of Zibby's Bookshop, and I thought you should all hear this episode in case you missed it.
I'm excited to be interviewing Lori Gottlieb today. Lori is the author of the instant New York Times bestseller, Maybe You Should Talk to Someone, A Therapist, Her Therapist, and Our Lives Revealed, which is currently being adapted into a TV series with Eva Longoria. She is a psychotherapist, a nationally recognized journalist, and the weekly Dear Therapist columnist for The Atlantic. Lori started her career in the TV and film industry, went back to medical school, and then began her writing career before becoming a therapist. She has written hundreds of cover stories, features, profiles, and more for The New York Times, The LA Times, The Washington Post, Time, Elle, O, The Oprah Magazine, Parents, Glamour, and many other publications. She's a frequent guest in the media, including on The Today Show, Good Morning America, The CBS Early Show, CNN, and NPR's Fresh Air. A graduate of Stanford University, she also attended Stanford Medical School and received a graduate degree in clinical psychology from Pepperdine University. She lives in Los Angeles. Welcome, Lori. Thanks so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
So can you please tell listeners what Maybe You Should Talk to Someone is about and what inspired you to write it?
Yeah. So I wasn't originally supposed to be writing this book. I was supposed to be writing a book about happiness. And ironically, the happiness book was making me miserable and depressed. And it's not because there aren't great books about happiness out there. There are. It's that I was starting off as a therapist, and I felt like the kind of book that I wanted to be writing was about what was going on in the therapy room, what was going on in people's lives. And it, you know, happiness as a byproduct of living a certain kind of life is a great thing, but I didn't want to write a book about happiness as an end goal. And so every day I would try to sit down and write this book, and I couldn't get myself to do it because it just felt really inauthentic and given what I was doing in the therapy room. And so eventually I canceled that book contract, and I didn't think I would write another book, or I had no idea what I would write. And then one day I just started writing about what was going on in my own therapy and what was going on with me as a clinician. And I decided to just bring people behind the scenes into the therapy room. And that is what became Maybe You Should Talk to Someone. So we follow the stories of four very different patients as they're going through various struggles in their lives. And then I'm going through an upheaval in my own life, and I become the fifth patient, and we see me go through my own therapy.
It's so good. It's like your own memoir is like weaved in with all these great stories and all this sort of psychological insight for readers for their own lives. It's like the perfect combination. Anyway, I loved it.
Well, great. Yeah, no, that's what I was trying to do. I was really trying to help people to see something about themselves through other people's stories. I think it's so much easier to see something, to see our blind spots when they're reflected in what somebody else is doing. So far, I think the readers have said, you know, I saw myself in every single one of these patients, even though I'm very different from them on the surface.
And I thought it was great how you talked in this book about that happiness book and how you were having such a hard time with it. You like didn't even want to tell your therapist about it. And even the book before that, the one about the article about kids and how to
lend your
kids
in therapy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And how you passed on that book deal and like hated yourself for it. So it's like so self-deprecating in a way, but also relatable and great anyway.
Well, when you turn in your first draft, so I didn't know when I was writing this book that I was going to include all of that information, right? Because with my story, I could pick and choose what I wanted to reveal. And so in the first draft, I just revealed it all because, first of all, I thought, well, this is the book that's not commercial at all, that no one's going to read, but it's the book I feel like I have to write, so I can just be free to write whatever I want because three people are going to read it. And of course, that's not what happened. But I think that I really felt like I had to walk the walk, that I had to show all of the pieces of me that maybe I would choose not to reveal because that's what my patients were doing. And I couldn't hold them to a certain standard and not meet that standard myself.
So interesting. And you also talk about how you got to this stage of your career through sort of a series of shifts or pivots, as people are saying now all the time. So you started off when you were at NBC as a development executive before, you know, Friends and ER were first launching, and then you decided you didn't want to do that. You end up in medical school after shadowing an ER doctor who you found fascinating for ER. Then you have a child, become a psychotherapist. So you basically, and now you're like this amazing writer on top of it and best-selling author. How do you think you had the emotional toughness and sort of sense of self to keep listening to what you really believed in through all these little transitions in life? Because I feel like some people just ignore those flashing lights to tell them that they are not happy with what you're doing, and you listen to all of them.
I did, and it's funny because in retrospect, they sound like very disparate careers, but in retrospect, they all have to do with story and the human condition. And I think that it's not that I was switching from one very different thing to one completely unrelated thing, even though it looked that way at the time. I used to always joke that I was either very versatile or very confused, and the reality is I'm not that versatile. So, so I was really working in the same thing, which was story in the human condition. So when I was working at NBC, when we were telling those stories on ER, they were these very, very rich, emotionally laden interesting stories, but they were fiction. And when I went into a real ER with our consultant on the show, who was an ER physician, all of a sudden it was like, wow, this is the meaning of life right here. This is life and death, real life and death. People's lives are changing in a millisecond, because you don't end up in an ER if something wasn't a surprise. And that was the world that I felt like I wanted to immerse myself in. And so I ended up going to medical school. And when I was at medical school, a lot of my professors were talking about managed care, this new thing at the time, and how it was going to be really hard for me to do this thing that I wanted to do, which was really immerse myself in my patients' stories and lives, and guide them throughout their lives, that the system was not going to be set up for that kind of work in the same way, and it would be harder. And I really grappled with that. And at the same time, I had been freelance writing to kind of support myself through, you know, this career change. And I ended up deciding to leave to become a journalist, where I could really immerse myself in people's stories, in real life stories. And then when I had a baby, I think like a lot of new moms, I felt very isolated during the day. I felt like I needed other adults to talk to, and I needed like my professional identity back somehow. And so, you know, like the UPS guy would come, I was always ordering diapers and myriad baby supplies, and I would say things like, how about those diapers, and how's the weather, and do you have kids? And he would literally be afraid to, you know, he'd like hope that I wasn't home, and he would like back away to his big brown truck, and I could see the fear in his eyes, and you know, like when someone's trying to avoid you. And so I called up the dean at Stanford, where I'd been in medical school, and I said, maybe I should come back and do psychiatry. And she said, you know, you're going to go through all this training. You have a newborn. You're going to then, you know, go through residency with a toddler, and you're going to, you know, the work you want to do is not prescribing medication. The work you want to do is the deeper work, and you can do that with a graduate degree in clinical psychology. And it was the best advice that I had ever gotten. It was one of those aha moments where everything just kind of like the last piece of the puzzle is now placed in it, and you're like, oh, that's the solution. and I did that, and I feel like I went from telling people stories as a journalist to helping people change their stories as a therapist, because I feel like a lot of what I do in the therapy room is help people to rewrite these faulty narratives, rewrite these stories that they've been carrying around for so long that are holding them back.
I think I was similarly stalking of my UPS guy as when my twins were really little, because my son ended up dressing up as the UPS man for Halloween. I'm like, I think I am ordering online too many times.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of, you know, helping your patients change their stories, one of your patients who is battling cancer at the outset gets upset when a friend of hers gives her advice, which is this story about Holland, going to Holland versus going to Italy. And I thought that was so relevant. I was hoping you could tell listeners the story. And then I wanted to know what your trip to Italy in life would have been. And are you there, or are you in Holland?
Oh, I love this story. It's not my story, I should say. It's Elizabeth Pearl Kingsley's story, and she let me include it in the book. And she wrote it because she has a child who has Down syndrome, and she was writing about the experience of what it's like when, no matter what it is, whether it's, you know, having a child with a disability, or having, you know, just something not work out the way that we expected it to work out, and how we kind of make that shift. And she says that, you know, she likens it to, you get on a plane and you're heading to Italy, right? You're going, you're so excited, you're going to have this like beautiful vacation in Italy, and you think about all the food you're going to eat and all the sights you're going to see, and, you know, everything that you're going to do in Italy, and you've been waiting for this and waiting for this, and then the plane lands, and they say, excuse me, slight change of plan, we actually landed in Holland. We're not in Italy. And, you know, Holland was not where you expected to be. That wasn't the plan, and you're bummed. You know, you're like, wait a minute, I had been planning to go to Italy, and I had this whole vision in my head of what Italy was supposed to be like and what that experience would be like for me. And I don't want to be in Holland. This wasn't what I signed up for. I did not buy a ticket to Holland. But you're there, you're in Holland. And she talks about how first people are really discombobulated by the change in itinerary, but that you start to notice that, you know, Holland isn't this awful place, that there are Rembrandts and tulips and, you know, they're like beautiful things in Holland too. It's just different from Italy. And so in the book, there's a woman who goes on her honeymoon and she comes back and they had wanted to get pregnant right away and she feels something in her breast and the thing that she felt that she thought was a sign of pregnancy is actually a sign of cancer. It ends up being they say it's a very treatable form of cancer. She gets through that just fine. And then 6 months later, she gets her sign-off scan so that she can get pregnant. And it turns out that on the scan, they find out that she has this very rare aggressive form of cancer, unrelated to the first, they think, and it's untreatable, and she is going to die. And they don't know whether it's like a year or 3 years or 10 years at the most, but wow, what a change in plans, right? And so a friend sends that to her, and she's like, screw you. You know, like, this is not helpful to me. This is not the same thing. But what she starts to realize is you don't have a choice, that whatever your reality is, you have to find a way to see the things that are, you know, to find joy in your situation despite the fact that it's not what you signed up for. And she does that. And she's no saint. She's not like, you know, I think we tend to kind of idealize cancer patients, like, that person's so brave and she's a saint. And she hated that. She's like, I am not brave. I'm scared of needles. Like, you know, like, I'm not, you know, like, it's like, what choice do I have here? But she really did things in her life. She took risks all of a sudden that she would never have taken otherwise. She has this very deep relationship with her husband that they probably wouldn't have gone to these places. You know, would she have traded all that to not have cancer? Sure. But all of these other things happened that never would have. And so I think Welcome to Holland helped her to, you know, approach the time that she had left in a very different way.
And do you feel in your life there's a situation in which you wanted to go to Italy but ended up in Holland?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I would say the most obvious one is, you know, I had my son on my own, and I never imagined doing that. I always imagined that I would have children with a partner. And when I was in my late 30s and I had gotten out of a relationship, thinking about, well, if I meet someone, it would take X number of years before we knew, you know, right, or even if I met someone tomorrow. And so I decided I'm going to have a baby because I don't want to. I'd seen so many people wait too long to have children, and I didn't want to do that. And so, which was a great decision, but at the same time, it was Holland. It wasn't Italy in the sense that, you know, I wanted to do it with a partner, and I didn't have a baby with a partner. I had a baby on my own. So I would say that would be my Holland, and you can see, you know, the great joy in that, that it was the best thing that could have happened was for me to have my son. But at the same time, it looked different.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
And I loved how you talked in the book about how you arrived at that decision and the process you went through, including sort of propositioning some guy you had met at a networking conference at Earth Cafe. That was amazing.
Yeah, it was my sperm donor date. And, yeah, we went through that process of, you know, thinking that maybe he would donate sperm, and he was on board, and then he wasn't on board, and then I ended up, you know, getting the sperm that I wanted through the sperm bank.
You're a little George Clooney.
Yes, they said he looked like a young George Clooney, and that was their selling point.
So one of the patients who you wrote a lot about is John, who you find kind of annoying, and he's calling everybody an idiot all the time and even like orders food into your session, which I could not believe he did. I mean, I guess I could once I got to know him a little in the book. But as you said, when you were talking about him, you said this as the saying, and he was talking about how his wife had was depressed, and he was actually upset by that, annoyed by that himself. And you said, as the saying goes, before diagnosing people with depression, make sure they're not surrounded by assholes. So I just was hoping you could talk to me a little bit more about maybe narcissistic personality disorder for anyone who's dealt with an asshole in their life, and maybe what you should do if you happen to be in a relationship with somebody like that, or how do you know if it's the people around you causing you to feel sad or, and you know, just depressed in general, or if it's something inside yourself?
Yeah, I should say, first of all, that one of the things that I felt was really important to do in the book was that I portrayed people the way that they presented themselves to me, and same with me presenting myself to my own therapist. So at the beginning of the book, the way that you feel about these people changes drastically by the end of the book, meaning, and as did, you know, it mirrors my evolution with these people too, that at the beginning, John was extremely unlikable. He was really abrasive. He was insulting to me. He certainly had narcissistic traits. But as I got to know him, I always know that someone's behavior is their way of coping with something unmanageable to them, something painful to them. And in John's case, I'm not going to spoil it, but you know, there was something incredibly traumatic that he reveals later that explains some of why he protects himself by keeping everybody at a distance with his behavior. It's hard to get close to him because of his, you know, the way he presents himself. And that's by design for him. And so when we first meet him, you know, he and his wife are, they've had this sort of mutual tragedy in their lives, and they don't talk about it. And he is very upset that she kind of can't get past it and is very depressed. And he's kind of like, we're not going to do this to our kids. We're not going to like be this couple who can't get past this tragedy. And so he kind of has the whole stiff upper lip attitude about it. And, you know, I think that she, I never met her, but I imagine that she felt very alone. And that can be really depressing. And, you know, he went through life kind of thinking that he was, as a protection against his mother had died when he was six, and he kind of thought it was his fault because of the circumstances of how it happened. And he protected himself by kind of, he had been his mother's favorite, and she always said he was so special, and he went through life thinking, I'm so special. That was his way of like going through the world. And so on top of like, you know, not being able to kind of meet his wife where she was with talking about her depression, he went through life thinking like, well, I'm, you know, everybody else is an idiot, and they're the cause of my problems, and why can't they just do things, you know, this way? I think that for people who are with someone like that, it's really important that, you know, they really needed to be in couples therapy. and they, I mean, there's a very nice place that they get to, which is really gratifying. But, you know, I think sometimes going back to that quote from the book, that there are times when people will come in and they'll tell me something like, oh, the problem is my boss or my mother or my partner or my child or, you know, whomever. And often they're not looking at their own role in the situation. Often they can't see that they're contributing to the situation either in the way they respond to it or in the fact that they're still engaged in it. But other times, if you really are surrounded by assholes, that can be really depressing. And sometimes, like, it's like, remove yourself from the situation. Why are you surrounding yourself with these people?
Good point. Can we go back to your son for a minute? One scene, so you have a big breakup with boyfriend at the beginning of the book, which, you know, propels you to seek out your own therapist, and you have to tell your son that boyfriend is not going to be around any longer, and he had become quite attached to him. Then you say, and you're dealing with it in this wonderful way, and, you know, as a therapist and also a mom, and you say the upside of being a therapist child is that nothing gets shoved under the rug. The downside is you'll be totally screwed up anyway. So I wanted to know what you feel about airing everything out with your, like, having your kids be open with their feelings and really sort of getting into everything with them, like how much it helps, or like what as a parent do you think is the most effective in helping out your kids have sort of great mental health?
Yeah. So in terms of airing everything out, I think it's letting your kids have their feelings, but that doesn't mean that I shared my feelings with him. So just for context, at the beginning of the book, my boyfriend and I were planning to get married, and he tells me that he has decided that he doesn't want to live with a kid under his roof for the next 10 years. And at the time, my son was 8, so, and he had not been hiding in the closet the entire time that we were dating. And my version of this story, and I very purposefully say my version of the story, meaning I wasn't seeing a lot of things until I went to therapy, but my version of the story was, well, you know, clearly he's a sociopath because, like, who dates someone for all this time just the day before says, oh, I just checked with my HR to make sure that when we get married, you know, I can get your son on my insurance policy and, you know, all this stuff, that have been going on for a long time. You know, who does that? Who does that if they didn't want a parent after his kids were about to go to college? You know, if they don't want to continue to be a parent, who gets involved with someone who, when we first met, you know, has a 6-year-old? I think that, you know, when he did that, I didn't tell my son, oh, look, he broke up with me because, I didn't even say he broke up with me, you know, I didn't say he broke up with me because, he doesn't want a kid around. I mean, I said, you know, we broke up. And, you know, and there's a scene in the book where I explain it and he has a lot of questions and, you know, I tell the truth, but I don't add details that are not going to be helpful for him to hear at that time. And so, I think that it's really important that I didn't try to kind of cheer him up. You know, he was sad. He was grieving in his own way, but I wasn't like, hey, let's go to Disneyland. Hey, let's go see that movie. It was like our instinct as parents is that we want to, it's hard for us to see our children in pain. And we want to take away their pain, but they need experience feeling their feelings and knowing that they will get through them. So he was going to have to be sad about this, and he was also going to know that I was available to him if he wanted support or to talk about it. And it wasn't one discrete conversation. It's not like when you talk about things, well, we had that conversation, right. Whoop, that's over. it's a process. And feelings are like the weather. They're like weather systems. They blow in, they blow out. You're going to feel, there's going to be a storm, and then the sun's going to come out, and then it's going to be cloudy, and then it's going to be, mild, and then it's going to be cold. And so they're just weather systems. And so it's okay that, he's feeling sad, and then he's with his friends, and he's happy, and then that's what it's like. And then there are other times where, we're going to have many more conversations about it because those feelings are going to blow back in. So I think that's what's important. I think so many times, especially nowadays, we're so afraid for our kids to experience any kind of discomfort that we try to make it more comfortable for them. And we're not really doing them a service by doing that.
Totally. I have to keep that in mind with my kids. It's like, I feel like I'm always trying to make everything better, but, obviously that's impossible.
Well, I think, too, that they know how to make things better in a lot of ways if they have support. So, like a kid will come home from school and say, like, this happened at lunch today, And the parent's instinct often is to say, well, why don't you tell her this, or why don't you do this next time? Or, as opposed to just like letting the kid keep talking like, oh yeah, that must have been hard. Or, and then they'll say, yeah. And then they'll go on and then, she did this and that. And then, well, what do you think was happening? Just asking them questions and then they come up with their own solutions that not only are probably better solutions than you would come up with because they know these people better and they know what they're doing. Like, you have to trust them. But also, it's a better solution because they came up with it and it gives them agency that even if what they try doesn't work out so well, they know that they can try something else. And when it does work out well, they know, they have the confidence to know that they are able to come up with a solution. And that's so important for the many, many, many things that they will encounter throughout not only their schooling years, but also just in life when they graduate.
Well, I have so many more questions, but I do want to make sure to get to the process of how you write, because I am really curious as to how long it took you to write this book and where you were. Like, do you write at home? Do you write in your therapy office? Like, I want you to paint a little picture for me of where you get all of this done and how you fit it in with the rest of the things in your life.
Well, I'm sitting in that place right now, and it's not a pretty picture. If people only knew, right? So I only do therapy in my therapy office because when I write, I really want to be, what I love about being in my therapy office is I work in a suite of therapists, and in between sessions, you can go in the kitchen, you can talk to people, you see people in the hallways, you know, it's social in that way. And I need that. I love that. But when I'm writing, I need just complete privacy. So yeah, I could close my door at the office, but I'm hearing voices when people leave their sessions, you know, just like there are too many distractions. And so I write at home and, you know, I take my writing days and that's what I do. So today I have to write my TED talk actually.
Oh, that's
and
exciting.
I'm a person who leaves the writing things generally for the last minute. And so, you know, I'm at home and that's where I write. And my process is that I usually need a little warm up. You know, like I need to do something else first. So I'm not like I can just wake up and sit down and write. Like I need to just kind of get loosen up a little bit. And so, you know, whether that's like replying to some emails or hanging out with my kid, depending on whether it's summer or not, you know, whatever it is, I'm taking care of like other things that I need to take care of, bills or, you know, this is not like fun stuff, but just I'm doing something else. And then all that is off my plate. I don't have to think about all the other things that I need to do that day. And then I can sit down and I can write.
And you have, this is now going to be a TV show. Maybe you should talk to someone on TV.
Yeah, it's being developed for television by Eva Longoria's company at 20th Century Fox.
So exciting.
Yeah.
And I saw, by the way, on your website that now you actually offer yourself as an expert to other people, other TV shows and movies. And so now that you're doing your own, it's like the perfect thing. You're like going to be like this total expert for yourself and your own show.
Oh, I've always done that, actually. You know, like I've consulted for shows before. You know, I think a lot of times they're looking for, well, what is the, you know, can you tell me more about, for example, grief? Or can you tell me more about teen depression? Or can, you know, like whatever's going on in a certain show. And they really want, the way that we had a consultant on ER who was a emergency room physician, right? That the shows really want them to be accurate. And they want to do a good job of portraying whatever they're portraying. So often they'll get experts to come in and say, you know, tell me more about this, or what would this be like, or how would someone react in this situation?
So one last thing, you're like probably the most prolific journalist I've ever like come across. You've written articles everywhere. And I was just wondering how you do that. Do you just have a zillion ideas all the time? Are you just always like jotting down notes for articles you want to write? Or like, tell me just a little 2-second thing about that part of your life.
Usually there's something that I see going on in the culture that seems really obvious. Like, you know, some examples, you know, the How to Land Your Kid in Therapy, the thing about sex and marriage, you know, like and egalitarian marriage. When I see something going on in the culture that everyone's talking about, but no one has really thought about in a certain way, that's what I love to write. I love to say, oh, this thing is going on, everyone's talking about it, but nobody's really looking at it from this angle. And so I want to create the lens through which to look at this in a different way. And I think in my Dear Therapist column that I write every week, which is different from the features that I write, mm-hmm. you know, I think that's what I help people to do too, is to say, hey, here's, you've got this problem, you're looking at it this way. I want you to look at it through this other lens. And I think that will help you.
And are you working on any other books now?
No, I'm still, this book is so new and I'm still on book tour for a while with this book.
And last question, do you have any advice to aspiring authors out there?
One of the things that people often say to me is, how did you know you had a story? Mm-hmm. How did you know that, you know, your story was going to be something that people would, that would resonate so strongly with people? And I always say to people, everybody has a story. That everybody has a story and that your story is inherently interesting. And I think that's such an important thing for writers to think about, because so often they try to say, you know, they try to like make something up, you know, which sometimes, you know, that's great. I mean, if you're writing fiction, obviously that's what you're doing. But I also think that it's based on something that you, even if you're writing fiction, it's based on something in your experience, even if the characters look very different from your experience, that there's some emotional truth to the characters that you're writing, or else you won't write a good novel. And so I think that there's something interesting in all of our lives and all of our stories, and the job of the writer is to tell it in a way that is real and raw and vulnerable, like in terms of pacing and structure, kind of makes sense to the reader so they can see why that story, you know, kind of see it as a mirror for themselves. One of the things I always say to writers too is don't tell the play-by-play of that scene. So often people will say like, here's the truth of my scene. And I'm like, oh my God, it's kind of like with the therapy room, like you got the highlight reel. You know, like, you know, in my book, you know, you didn't get the full 50 minutes every time that I was writing about a therapy session. You got the highlight reel. Here were the important beats in the story, and you're getting them. You're getting them as they really happened. You're getting the authentic version of it, but I'm not giving you every single line that was spoken.
Right. That makes sense. Well, awesome. Thank you so much, Lori, for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books, and also for your fantastic book.
Well, thank you so much. It was such a fun conversation.
And by the way, my therapist like loved it. I just wanted to say that.
I'm so glad. I've been hearing that a lot.
All right. Well, thanks so much. Have a great day.
Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens and at Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Also sign up for my newsletter at ZibbyOwens.com and sign up for my virtual book club and meet lots of authors on Zoom every other week. Thanks so much to Steve and Ryan at Texture Sound for the sound editing. And thank you to Morning Moon Productions for providing this fantastic intro and outro music.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.